Welcome to the December 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. Dear member and fellow maritime professionals, well, it is not often that I find myself the center of the news, but so it seems this month. On my trip to Goa in September to participate in the IIMS Indian Conference, I met up with Nishit Doshi from Trader Magazine, who has closely followed the Institute's progress over the past decade. We chatted and I gave an exclusive interview to him. He was keen to know about my journey over the past decade, leadership ethos, and how IIMS continues to evolve and remain relevant amid sweeping changes across the maritime industry. Reading Nishit's words of introduction to the interview were humbling and much appreciated, indeed. At the same event, Nishit also spoke earnestly with current IIMS President, Captain Ruchindale FIIMS, about leadership, technology, and his vision for a more connected, future-ready IIMS. I recommend the latest report magazine, edition 114, which has been published today. It is another fine blend of hard technical information, incident and accident reports, and a range of quality stories and feature articles. See elsewhere in this news bulletin for how to access and read the magazine. And if you are keen to read about the inside track of life at IIMS this year, do have a read of my review of the year article. 2025 has been a highly successful year for the Institute on many levels. In particular, I am delighted to have met so many members this past year on my travels. Impeccable hospitality and warm welcomes afforded me wherever I have been will live long in my memory. Last month, on behalf of the Maritime Professional Council of the UK, we published Lithium-Ion Batteries, What We Know So Far, which my colleague Francis Burkett and I co-authored. It can be downloaded via the news page of the IIMS website. If there is one thing that has clogged up my inbox all year long, it is lithium-ion batteries. Many surveyors I speak with are so concerned about how little they know or understand. The aim of this publication was never to take a deep dive into the chemistry, although this is important. Nor was it designed to make a surveyor an instant expert in lithium-ion battery technology, for it is complex. It was more about sharing some high-profile case studies and giving people further information and links to guidance to enable them to learn more. The learning curve is a steep one. You can find the report at www.mpc-uk.org. Continuing on the same subject, you may recall that recently I hinted that IIMS had commissioned some extensive training on lithium-ion batteries. I am delighted to say that work is now complete, and the course material is ready for study. The four-module course runs for about 10 hours in total and can be studied at your convenience. It comprises the following: Module 1, Lithium Battery Chemistry and Structure. Module 2, Safety and Installation of Lithium Batteries. Module 3, Maintenance and Electrical Installation. And Module 4, Surveying and Inspections. There are very few specialists operating in this field, but David and Magda O'Neill are at the top of the game. It is they who I turned to when putting this training together. The modules are all available to study remotely in your own time and can be accessed via the IIMS On Demand Training Portal website at trainingportal.iims.org.uk. In the past few weeks, I have announced a few important changes to the IIMS team structure. It is not a major restructure as such, rather a reflection that some of the team's job titles did not reflect either their day-to-day work responsibilities or their seniority within the organization. So, in no particular order, Jen Argent becomes head of finance. Camilla Robertson becomes general manager. Rachel Moores is now membership secretary. Craig Williams becomes senior designer. I have also invited David Parsons, who heads up the IIMS certifying authority, to join our internal management team with effect from the 1st of January 2026. And finally, given that the Christmas holidays are just around the corner, if you celebrate the festivities, may I be one of the first to wish you all the best for a safe and peaceful holiday period and good fortune in 2026. Survey well, Mike. And now, Sarah White MIIMS has written a report on the IIMS Canada Conference 2025 report, which goes as follows. As the recreational waterways began closing for the season and boats were being hauled for winter storage, the Canadian branch of the International Institute of Marine Surveying opened its two-day conference in Hamilton, Ontario, on October 22, 2025. The location was aptly the waterfront center, with a clear view of the harbor. First up to the podium was Mike Schwartz, CEO of IIMS UK, who provided an overview of the Institute and its offerings for those newly introduced to the organization, as well as a synopsis of the year's events at HQ and with our international partners. As the day ramped up, I, along with the other attendees, were honored to welcome such eminent speakers as the following. Rui Fernandez, partner at Gardiner Roberts, a prominent Toronto lawyer, talked about avoiding pitfalls in surveys and investigations, errors and omissions. Rui emphasized the importance of keeping current with industry standards, which made me appreciate the extensive educational and informative material and opportunities provided by IIAMS worldwide. Rui also highlighted the importance of accuracy in the role of the surveyor, both in reports and actions, and to take a lot of pictures, which are imperative in the work we do. Robert Bell, Applied Precision Inc. 3D, followed with a presentation on 3D LiDAR scanning, digital transformation. Robert is the co-founder and president of Applied Precision 3D, a company that develops 3D and AR technology, providing high-accuracy data used in retrofit, inspection, maintenance, wear analysis, 3D CAD and BIM integration, and reverse engineering of vessel components, an impressive resource with a sound place in our industry, supporting surveyors and shipbuilders, repairers. Vicky Gruber, Harbour Master of the Hamilton Oshawa Port Authority, took the podium after lunch on the first day addressing the topic of port safety and security, strengthening the greater harbour community, highlighting the challenges and responsibilities of her and her team's roles in port safety and security with thought-provoking examples of where and when things could have gone very wrong without due diligence, education, training and strong industry relationships, of which marine surveyors are a part. Jamie Buckley, Director of BYD, Naval Architects, presented early afternoon. Jamie has an impressive pedigree in naval architecture and heads a family-run design company 2012, with offices in Southampton, UK, Hamilton, Ontario, and Tampa, Florida. US BYD conducts marine engineering, structural design, new builds and retrofits, laser scanning technical support and services, naval architecture, and vessel surveys. BYD engages in the decarbonization process and uses modern software and AI automation tools, NeuralShipper TM, which make the calculation time shorter and assist with simulations. Simulations examples were shown. Jamie mentioned that in the decarbonization process, the electrical propulsion, installation and energy storage on board, in themselves, become increasingly important. A recurring theme throughout the seminars was the risk associated with lithium-ion batteries in the marine industry. Maciej Rinkiewicz, standards developer with the American Boat and Yacht Council, is a leading voice in marine electrical standards and presented on lithium battery systems and installations on small craft. Maciej focused not only on the construction and different types of lithium batteries but also on the importance of using the correct types and adhering to specific installation requirements, which include the use of battery monitoring systems. Failure to do so can result in dangerous situations. Examples of failures and prevention of failures was discussed, as was thermal runaway situations. The audience was provided with an email address for further questions, tech@abycinc.org. Jan Willem de Jong, Managing Director of Neptunus Yachts. It was a pleasure to welcome Jan Willem de Jong, the Managing Director of Neptunus Yachts, an established Ontario yard that builds Category A luxury recreation pleasure craft from 55 feet to 75 feet. Jan, with the aid of slides, talked about the building process of their yachts and the challenges facing the industry today, government regulations, luxury tax, tariffs and CUSMA, reduced water access, shortage of skilled personnel and sensitivity to economic changes. Neptunus is the only large fiberglass production yacht manufacturer left in Canada. Prem Shankar, the Naval Arch. As our final presentation at the end of the day, we were privileged to have the globally respected naval architect, founder of the Naval Arch and recipient of India's Best Naval Architect Award, Prem Shankar, to present on where engineering meets survey, practical tools for marine surveyors. The Naval Arch supports industry stakeholders globally, including surveyors, operators, and contractors, by providing reliable, high-quality software, learning, and engineering solutions. Prem homed in on the close relationship of both surveyors and engineers, providing real-life examples and solutions where his company had assisted surveyors with challenges faced in mooring and towing operations, sea fastening, cargo securing, heavy lifts, pad eyes, deck strength checks, and stability. The Naval Arch provide user-friendly software packages for tow operations, bollard pull, calculations, cargo securing and checklists for operations. The day was completed with an enjoyable opportunity to network and socialise with delegates and presenters in the comfortable surroundings of the Royal Hamilton Yacht Club during cocktails and dinner. Day 2 was equally as informative as Day 1, and started with the privilege of listening to Mike Wall, Managing Director, Mike Wall & Associates Limited, presented live from Bangkok on challenges and sound advice on The Surveyor, Getting Paid. Mike is a fellow of RENA, a chartered engineer, former chief engineer with Cunard Line, a renowned lecturer, author, and industry educator with deep expertise across marine operations and surveying. Mike is the editor of Flashlight and has assisted many surveyors who have faced remuneration issues. Mike's stark message on the importance of getting paid and the surveyor's responsibilities was clearly shared in his presentation. A good interaction with the public was experienced. Mike also publishes useful handbooks on a range of different subjects for surveying companies. Kurt Huck, Transport Canada, Manager, Flag State, Compliance and Enforcement, with Transport Canada, provided a clear outline of the program's goals and challenges, as well as how the marine surveyor could assist. A hot topic in the Canadian marine industry today includes the advances in the Small Vessel Compliance Program, which is of enormous importance to commercial craft not more than 15 gross tonnage, with 12 or fewer passengers, workboats, passenger, fishing and tugs, that are not subject to mandatory inspection under the Vessel Safety Certificate regulations. The program's goal is to improve safety practices and affects over 31,750 in the vessel registry. Surveyors can assist TC in inspections, pilot projects are run and evaluated. Of immense benefit to the conference was the interest and professional advice shared by three well-known and respected lawyers specializing in the marine field, not least was the esteemed Ms. Anumeet Tor, who specializes in international trade compliance and customs law. Anu is a graduate of Windsor Law and has received the J.W. Whiteside Award for her contributions to access to justice. She also represented Canada at the 2018 IMF and World Bank annual meetings in Bali as a member of the Young Diplomats of Canada. Anu spoke on managing liability for marine surveyors, referencing case studies and citing pertinent sections of the Marine Liability Act, while also discussing the surveyor's obligations and risk management of contract terms. Case studies were discussed. Audience interaction both in person and through the virtual Zoom platform with Anu was well appreciated. Chris Kirby, principal of Lani Maritime, represented MRC Marine Recycling Corporation. One of the subjects that is high on the list in the maritime world today is the recycling of recreational craft, commercial small craft, and large ships. Chris Kirby, principal of Lani Maritime, is a 35-year maritime professional who spent his first decade in the industry as a commercial diver and the next two with a tug, barge company. Chris has served clients in several facets of the industry, from heavy haul, survey, salvage, and wreck removal, and has been salvage master on multiple recoveries on all three Canadian coasts, working closely with MRC for the last several years. His presentation provided insight into how MRC has changed and made impressive advancements in clean ship recycling over the years. Chris shared examples of the beaching of the MV St. Clair for ship recycling, noting the Goliath ability of their crew, creative photo moment. Chris also explained how they had improved the efficiency of dismantling craft with diamond wire saws and the importance MRC placed on the cleanliness of their operations. His talk was highly informative and enjoyable to listen to and provided an interesting contrast to Jan of Neptune Yacht's presentation on boat building. It was an honor, towards the end of the day, to welcome back a presenter who has spoken to IIMS members before on behalf of Transport Canada. Luke Tremblay, Transport Canada TC. Luke is the Executive Director, Domestic Vessels Regulatory Oversight, overseeing vessel inspection, certification, and regulation for all Canadian domestic vessels through Transport Canada Marine Safety and Security. He is a seasoned ship designer and former marine consultant, who provides deep technical expertise in regulatory development, safety systems, and compliance, holding degrees in naval engineering, architecture and engineering technology. Luke talked about overview of small vessel oversight, small vessel manufacturers, and importer compliance. Program oversight, marine safety management system regulations, implementation and the Domestic Vessel Oversight Review Initiative. In this highly informative talk, he also touched upon the categories and top 10 safety deficiencies by vessel type. One of the key takeaways for me was the paramount importance of marine surveyors staying up to date with vessel compliance requirements and serving as an essential aid to education in our industry. Jose Luis Duarte, Thord & Bearings Inc., a marine engineer with expertise in marine diesel engines, heavy equipment systems, and field engineering, followed Luke with his presentation on water-lubricated stern tube bearings. Jose works for Thorden Bearings Inc., founded in Hamilton, Ontario, a global leading company in oil and grease-free bearing solutions. He gave a very informative presentation on the environmentally friendly shaft line bearings and the revolutionary T-Boss ship design, which has facilitated inspection and replacement of conventional systems, with significant space-saving benefits. Special water lubrication bearing materials are available for small boats and workboats operating in shallow water, abrasive waters. The event closed out with sound words of wisdom from Mike Schwartz with a presentation entitled 19 Tips for Business Success, which was keenly listened to, as he shared his own personal recommendations from a business career spanning nearly 40 years. The conference was well attended, and the feedback received was highly positive. A special thank you is owed to all who attended, and especially to our presenters who voluntarily gave their valuable time to share their professional knowledge and experience with our delegates. The attendees, virtual and in person, will receive summaries of the presentations and links to the videos of the presentations. Next, IIMS has put together a list of all the maritime regulation changes that start from the 1st of January 2026, which you can find in a separate podcast. For our next story, the Transportation Safety Board of Canada has published its investigation report into a loss of cargo and a person who fell overboard in Frobisher Bay, Nunavut, in 2023. What happened? On the 27th of October 2023, the cargo vessel Sivamut was anchored in Frobisher Bay, Nunavut, while transshipping cargo to Iqaluit, Nunavut, using barges and tugs. During transshipment operations, the tug Kimmick departed the Sivamut while towing the Tarsiwak barge in an alongside tow. The barge carried 24 shipping containers with one crew member stationed atop the containers. Shortly after the tug's departure, the barge listed to port and began to capsize, causing the crew member and 23 containers to fall overboard. 8 minutes later, the crew member was retrieved from the water by the Sivamut crew and then transported to Iqaluit for medical attention. 16 containers were later retrieved. As part of its investigation, the TSB performed a stability assessment of the Tarsiwak and found that it was operating beyond its stability limits, compromising its ability to right itself. While the barge had not undergone a stability assessment and was not required to by regulation, the company did have a structural arrangement plan indicating the maximum allowable deck load. However, this plan was kept onshore, and the limits were not communicated to the crew. Without this information, the crew relied solely on previous experience to determine safe operating limits. The investigation also determined that procedures for transshipment operations within the company's safety management system were limited and dispersed across multiple documents, and that informal operational practices had developed over time, reducing safety margins. Following the occurrence, the company took several safety actions, including developing third-party loading guides for its barges, adding a transshipment procedures manual to its SMS, and installing recovery devices on the tugs. You can read the full report via IIMSCanada.ca. Up next, Class NK has released second edition of guidelines for onboard CO2 capture and storage systems. It assumes onboard CO2 capture systems use of a membrane separation method, which are expected to be applicable to a wide variety of vessel types. The guidelines can support the safety development, manufacturing, and installation of relevant systems. Not only fuel transition, but interest in capturing CO2 from ships' exhaust gas is growing as a way to reduce GHG emissions. Development of onboard systems for capturing and storing CO2 is also being carried out. In 2023, Class NK published the first edition of the guidelines for onboard CO2 capture and storage systems, which outlined requirements for OCCS using amine absorption method. In the newly issued edition 2.0, the guidelines have been expanded to include requirements for OCCS using membrane separation method, which is lower energy requirement compared to amine absorption method and does not require a permanent supply of amine solution. In addition to that, Class NK has reorganized the fundamental functional requirements for OCCS, extracted the common requirements across different capture methods, and compiled them into a set of generic requirements that should apply regardless of the specific capture method. You can download the new guidelines via Class NK's website. For our next report, a newly released nuclear ship safety handbook by the MIT Maritime Consortium aims to set the standard for safe maritime nuclear propulsion. The first-of-its-kind handbook serves as a guide for design safety for civilian nuclear ships. Using research data and standards, combined with operational experiences during civilian maritime nuclear operations, the handbook provides unique insights into potential issues and resolutions in the design efficacy of maritime nuclear operations, a topic of growing importance on the national and international stage. The handbook, which is divided into chapters in areas involving the overlapping nuclear and maritime safety design decisions that will be encountered by engineers, is careful to balance technical and practical guidance with policy considerations. The guide is available to download online. In our next segment, the 2024 global marine insurance market showed relative stability according to the International Union of Marine Insurance. In the IUMI Stats Report 2025, it said global marine insurance premiums in 2024 totaled $39.92 billion, a 1.5% uplift on 2023. Stability was seen across all lines of business except for offshore energy, where premiums reduced by almost 8%. Ocean hull premiums were reported at $9.67 billion, up by 3.5% on the previous year. Europe continues to dominate and reported an unbroken growth trend since 2019. Growth in the Russian hull market reached 42%, largely due to sanctions preventing Russia from placing risks overseas. Loss ratios for Europe remained relatively stable. Premiums for cargo insurance reached $22.64 billion, representing a 1.6% UPTICK on last year. Subdued growth was largely due to general economic and trade conditions. China performed particularly well, however. Loss ratios improved for the sixth consecutive year. The offshore energy sector reversed its recent run of premium-based growth to report a 7.9% reduction at $4.34 billion for 2024. London continues to dominate this market with a 60% share. Notably, the Nordics was the only market to expand its share in 2024, by 27%. A pressurized oil price, sanctions, decarbonization initiatives and market capacity have all played a part in the performance of this business line. The report also provides an update on IUMI's major claims database, which contains data from 2013 onward, with 30 national insurance associations now contributing to the hull and cargo analysis. More than 17,400 observations have now been recorded. Additionally, and for the first time, the report introduces the newly revised IUMI Hull Inflation Index, which helps insurers to explain marine repair cost inflation using a range of macroeconomic indicators. You can download the stats at iumi.com/news. Next, DNV has recently identified cases where CO2 fire extinguishing systems had multiple depleted CO2 cylinders, potentially compromising fire safety and vessel integrity. Two primary contributors to this issue have been identified. First, incorrect use of ultrasonic liquid level gauges. Level gauging at temperatures exceeding the manufacturer's instructions on maximum temperature, CO2 cylinder temperature, gives unreliable readings. At elevated temperatures, CO2 converts into a supercritical fluid state, and the cylinder no longer has a liquid level to measure. And second, bursting disc material. This issue relates to the material used in the CO2 cylinder valve bursting disc, to date an issue only observed in systems supplied by NK Company Limited. From South Korea up to 2016. As highlighted in Marshall Island Maritime Safety Advisory No. 14-23, service experience has shown that bursting discs made of copper are prone to fatigue failure. To mitigate these risks, DNV recommends taking the following actions. Ensure the latest version of the CO2 user manual is on board and followed. Use approved service suppliers and within the applicable regulatory intervals. Only use ultrasonic level gauges within the temperature range specified by the manufacturer for the liquid level test of CO2 cylinders. You can find the technical news via iams.org.uk. In our next report, an undocumented steam drain line modification contributed to an accident on oil tanker Wisdom Venture, which resulted in burns to three crew members, according to the Australian Transport Safety Bureau. On the 6th of May 2025, the oil tanker Wisdom Venture was drifting off Sydney, New South Wales, when the engineering team commenced maintenance on the main deck steam valve for the cargo heating system. The valve had been leaking from the bonnet joint gasket. Following isolation of the system, the team removed the valve bonnet. During this process, residual hot condensate was suddenly released, resulting in burn injuries to three crew members. First aid was administered on board, and the injured personnel were subsequently evacuated to shore for medical treatment. The ATSB found that prior to commencing maintenance work on the cargo heating system main deck steam valve, the crew did not allow adequate time for the steam system to cool. In addition, the verification system to ensure that the steam line was fully depressurized was not used. This was most likely due to the time pressures to reintroduce heating to the main engine fuel system. The ATSB also found that a drain line in the warm-up bypass line had been permanently modified without formal approval or documentation. This change was not incorporated into a risk assessment and no formal review was conducted. This undocumented change likely introduced a system vulnerability that undermined the effectiveness of the steam system isolation. Additionally, the modification was not identified in the chief engineer's handover process, leaving the incoming engineering team unaware of the altered configuration and associated risks. It was also not identified during routine technical inspections or superintendent riding visits. This resulted in the ship manager's management of change process not being applied. Following the incident, the ship manager advised that the drain line on Wisdom Venture has been returned to its original design configuration. A fleet-wide campaign has also been initiated to identify any unauthorized modifications to shipboard piping systems. Where such modifications are identified, internal investigations will be conducted. The incident highlights the critical importance of adhering to established safety and management of change procedures. Where changes are to be made to a system, these need to be recorded and the processes to identify the risks need to be followed to ensure there are no unintended consequences. You can read the full report via iaamsaustralia.com.au. Up next, the Chemical Distribution Institute, International Chamber of Shipping, Oil Companies International Marine Forum and the Society of International Gas Tanker and Terminal Operators have released the second edition of Ship-to-Ship Transfer Guide for Petroleum, Chemicals and Liquefied Gases. It provides comprehensive guidance on planning and executing STS transfers of petroleum, chemical and liquefied gas cargoes. Applicable to all vessels and referenced within Annex 1 of the MARPOL Convention, it serves as a key resource for vessel masters, marine superintendents, STS service providers and regulatory authorities. You can find the guide at witherbees.com. For our next segment, Lloyd's Register has collaborated with DYNAMARINE to deliver an independent auditing scheme for ship-to-ship service providers. Under the agreement, LR's auditors will assess STS service providers against the quality and safety standards established by OCIMF guidelines and risk data and records of DYNAMARINE. The resulting audit reports will be reviewed and evaluated by DYNAMARINE, which will then issue a final assessment and performance score to each participating provider. This collaborative approach aims to create a consistent and trusted framework for verifying the competence and reliability of STS operators worldwide. This initiative directly supports the objectives of the recently updated OCIMF STS guide, which calls for independent verification of service providers' self-assessments. It also represents a significant step towards reducing the duplication of audits across the energy sector, paving the way for a standardized assurance model similar to SIRE, specifically tailored for STS service providers. Next, the European Maritime Safety Agency has published its annual overview of marine casualties and incidents 2025, in which it presents statistics of marine casualties and incidents that cover the period from 1 January 2015 to 31 December 2024 as reported by the EU member states. In 2024, most of the indicators, such as the number of occurrences, ships lost, fatalities or injuries, are near or below the average values for the entire period from 2015 to 2024. In 2024, 2,659 marine casualties and incidents were reported, which represent a decrease of 50 compared to 2023 and an increase of 24 compared to 2022. The total number of marine casualties and incidents reported from 2015 to 2024 was 26,751 with an annual average of 2,675. The annual average of marine casualties and incidents from 2015 to 2024 was equal to the pre-pandemic average from 2015 to 2019. The number of casualties and incidents in 2024 was 0.6% lower than the annual average in the analyzed period. After a peak of 106 very serious casualties reported in 2018 and a total of 77 in 2019, annual very serious marine casualties were on average 57 from 2020 to 2024, with a minimum of 51 in 2024, indicating a downward trend. In 2024, 2,864 ships were involved in marine casualties and incidents, a decrease of 74 ships compared to 2023, and an increase of 29 ships compared to 2022. Between 2015 and 2024, EU accident investigative bodies launched 1,123 investigations and made public 950 safety investigation reports. In 2024, 60 investigations were reported to have been launched, meaning a decrease of 34.1% in comparison with 2023. It is worth noting that the number of investigations launched has been declining year by year since 2018. You can read the report at www.emsa.europa.eu. In our next story, the Taiwan International Ports Corporation has now published a whitelist of 47 shipowners' insurance companies. The new system, effective as of October 15, means that all vessels entering or leaving Taiwanese ports must be insured by a company specified in the whitelist or one that meets the following credit ratings: Standard & Poor's BBB rating, AM Best Company B++ rating, Moody's Investors Service Baa2 rating, and Fitch Ratings BBB rating. If a vessel is insured by a company not on the whitelist but meets the accepted credit ratings, relevant credit rating documentation must be provided to TIPC for verification. If a vessel is insured by an insurance company other than those listed, the Taiwan Maritime and Port Bureau will not approve its port entry and departure procedures. Up next, Transport Canada issues standards for portable fire extinguishers update. A new policy, acceptable standards and equivalencies for portable fire extinguishers required on Canadian vessels, has been published by Transport Canada. This policy is to clarify the required standards that are accepted by Transport Canada for portable fire extinguishers equipped on all Canadian vessels and provide a table of equivalency for PFE required for compliance with Part 1 of the Vessel Fire Safety Regulations. It applies to PFE installed on all Canadian vessels. PFE carried on vessels for compliance with Part 1 of the VFSR must meet the requirements of the FSS Code Chapter 4 and be type approved by a recognized organization. PFE meeting the requirements of Part 1 of the VFSR and their equivalents may be used aboard vessels subject to that requirement to satisfy the PFE carriage requirements of that part, as well as on grandfathered vessels when PFEs that comply with requirements of the FDEER are replaced. For vessels less than 24 meters in length, PFE must comply with Part 3 of the VFSR, Section 12 of the Small Vessel Regulations, Section 3.18 of the Fishing Vessel Safety Regulations, or Subsection 25, 8 of the Large Fishing Vessel Inspection Regulations. A PFE that meets the approval requirements of the VFSR that is of the classification and capacity of PFE is required by one of the provisions above, or an equivalent may be used. The table of equivalencies for portable fire extinguishers provided in Appendix 1 gives PFE accepted by Transport Canada as equivalent to 9-litre water or foam fire extinguishers with a 2A fire rating and larger capacity foam extinguishers required by SOLAS. You can read the full policy via iiamscanada.ca. In our penultimate report, the International Maritime Organization has agreed to adjourn the extraordinary session of the Marine Environment Protection Committee, which was convened in October, to consider the adoption of draft amendments to MARPOL Annex 6, including the IMO Net Zero Framework. The extraordinary session will be reconvened in 12 months' time. In the interim, member states will continue to work towards consensus on the IMO Net Zero Framework. And for our final story, the International Cargo Handling Association has elected Scott Mackay as its new chair. Mackay joined a state chapter of ICHCA Australia 7 years ago. He was appointed chair and became a member of the International Board in November 2023. Formerly a chartered accountant at KPMG and a principal at Oricon, a design and delivery global infrastructure consultancy, he has vast experience in the supply chain industry, including senior roles in Europe, Asia and Australia as CEO in warehousing and road transport, container rail and intermodal and bulk ports operations. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.